The information and opinions presented in this ARC Energy Ideas podcast are provided for informational purposes only and are subject to the disclaimer link in the show notes.
This is the ARC Energy Ideas podcast with Peter Terzakian and Jackie Forrest, exploring trends that influence the energy business.
Welcome to the ARC Energy Ideas podcast. I'm Jackie Forrest.
And I'm Peter Terzakian. Welcome back. Well, the flurry of policy announcements, executive orders from the Biden administration are not ceasing, especially when it comes to climate and achieving things like net zero. We had the KXL, Keystone XL cancellation. The United States has rejoined the Paris Agreement. There's the climate emergency declaration, pausing of drilling, oil and gas drilling on federal lands. And there's a whole list of things that are going. It certainly signals a big shift, desire, not surprisingly, to go abruptly from one state of energy and emissions to another. It's not a lot of sort of hybrid solutions, it seems to me. It's like, it's almost like, okay, we're going to go from one to the other, right? And, you know, my Energy File vignette this week sort of showed how many things in my collection, there is a hybrid period. In other words, sort of a transition period from one to another. I showed how we had tail lights of vehicles that actually both had light bulbs and had oil lanterns in them. And then finally you go to electric. And this notion of smooth transition through hybrids is really a common theme over the course of energy transition history, but it seems like we want to accelerate that. And in this country as well. I mean, we had a whole slurry of climate announcements before Christmas, including clean fuel standard, all sorts of things on achieving net zero by 2050.
Right, legislation, the federal government.
Carbon tax, yeah. I mean, you name it, the list is long. And so what do the people think? That's why we're delighted today to actually have a couple people who have tapped into that. What do the people of Canada think? What do the people of Alberta think? So I want to segue into the introduction of two very special guests. We've got Janet Brown, Calgary-based pollster and political commentator. She's been tracking public opinion and politics in Alberta for more than 25 years. And we have my good friend Linda Cody, executive director of the Pembina Institute. The Pembina Institute's a Canadian foremost, in my opinion, think tank on energy and environmental issues. And prior to joining the Pembina Institute, Linda was chief sustainability officer for Enbridge and vice president of sustainability, Vancouver 2010 Olympic Games, World Wildlife Canada. It goes on and on, Linda. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Linda, we also worked together on Canada's energy transition in the Generation Energy Council report in 2018. So it's always a delight to have you. And Janet, you and I have served on panels together. So let's start the conversation. Janet, you've been polling in conjunction with the Pembina Institute. What's on the mind of people?
We did a poll in December, and it was just designed to sort of talk to Albertans about where they're at in terms of energy transition and the economy and the environment. Here in Alberta, we're often seen as climate change deniers, people who don't want to move forward when it comes to energy transition. And this research was really just about getting to the reality of what people are thinking when it comes to energy and the environment and the economy.
Okay. And Linda, you had, Pembina had commissioned the poll. So why did you decide now is the time to conduct this poll?
Well, we wanted to poll Albertans to test their interest in climate action, get a better idea of where they're at on those issues and their views of current economic trends, both risks and opportunities facing the province. As we all know, the rhetoric at the political level on climate and energy issues in Alberta can occasionally get pretty heated and polarized. So we just wanted to get a handle on how ordinary Albertans see things, what they see as problems, what they see as solutions, so that we at the Pembina Institute know where to lean in.
You want to tell us sort of the sampling and what you did procedurally, Janet?
Sure. So it was a poll of 900 Albertans age 18 and over, and we use a hybrid methodology. So it's a random sampling. We initially contact people using live telephone operators over the phone. We call from a random list of numbers that contains 50% landlines, 50% cell phones. When we reach somebody, we give them three options. We say, you can answer the survey now, I'll call you back at a more convenient time, or we'll send you a link and you can answer it online. The other thing we'll do is we'll try a number up to five times at five different times a day before we give up on it. The methodology, it's quite rigorous. It's really designed to maximize the response rate that we get from people. So we're not just trying to talk to the easy to reach people. We're not trying to talk to the people who join online panels because they enjoy answering surveys. We're trying to get a really solid response rate. And this is the same methodology I used during the 2019 provincial election. And I'm proud to say I did the only poll that was within the margin of error, not just at the provincial level, but we were also within the margin of error of how the vote was going to turn out in Calgary, Edmonton, and the rest of the province.
So, Janet, you sampled, I think, 900 people of a population of over 4 million. So my first thought was, well, how can 900 people really represent everyone in the province?
Well, it comes down to random probability sampling. I mean, if you put sugar in your coffee and you stir it, the coffee's properly stirred, you only have to take one sip to know if you've got the right mix of sugar or not. And random sampling is pretty much the same thing. If you set strict quotas to make sure that your sample is representative and you do a truly random draw of the population, a sample of 900 will give you a margin of error of plus or minus 3.3 19 times out of 20. And as I said, during the provincial election, we surveyed 900 people. We ended up actually being more accurate than polls that were much larger. And I think it came down to the quality of our sampling.
So it's like taking a handful of jelly beans out of a big jelly bean jar as a representative of the color composure of the entire jelly bean jar.
Sure. As long as the jelly beans are properly mixed up. If they're not mixed up and you put a hand in, you're not going to get a
representative. And I'm going to come to that because... Well, let's just assume it's just all from the same jelly bean jar first, because of course there's differences between the cities and the rural population. But before we go there, one question that you asked is if Alberta is too dependent upon oil and gas, and 81% of Albertans agreed that we are too dependent upon oil and gas.
Yes, and Albertans have felt that way for a while. I asked a similar question back in 2018 for a poll I did for CBC Calgary, and we got almost the same number. I think it was 79% back then. What's changed, though, is the number of people who strongly agreed with that statement. So 81% said they either strongly or somewhat agreed. 45% of them were saying strongly agree. That was only 37% back in 2018. So we felt for a long time that this province was too dependent on oil and gas. And in recent years, we're feeling that even more intensely.
Mm-hmm. And was there now getting down to the different parts or different jelly bean jars, like rural versus cities? Did you break it out?
Yes, there's lots of detailed data for anybody that wants to sort of visit the website and Pemda's website and look at this stuff. But that's the other thing about Alberta that I don't think people outside of Alberta appreciate is how much diversity there is within the province. I mean, people kind of think about the stereotype of Alberta. They think about Alberta as a monolith. But Edmonton and Calgary are very, very different cities when it comes to political attitudes. And then the rest of Alberta is different still. So on almost all of these questions, what we found out was that Edmontonians were the most likely to sort of express pro-environment opinions. It was a little less so in Calgary and less so in the rural areas. But even in the rural areas, we find that a majority of people will agree with the notion that Alberta is too dependent on oil and gas, will agree with the notion that Alberta's got to move to a net zero future.
So I will include in our show notes a link to the Pembina press release. And at the bottom of that, you can go and see all the detailed survey results and by different areas of Alberta as well. But Linda, let's bring you into the conversation. Were you surprised that so many Albertans felt that we are too dependent? And what signals are we getting from the Alberta government in terms of diversification, in your view?
Well, obviously, Janet's, you know, history of research indicates it's a view that's been there for a while. But as she says, people are getting more anxious about it now, but it's a really tough situation when your long-term economic success depends on diversifying the economy. But in the short term, the reality is you're still dependent on one main commodity sector. But I think with COVID and the oil price collapse and everything going on now, we are seeing governments at all levels moving on diversification. And I know you've had Minister Savage, the energy minister for Alberta, on your show before on your podcast. And she's talked about all of the different opportunities that are on the table right now for Alberta, which we at Pembina also agree very much with: hydrogen, geothermal, renewable minerals like lithium for batteries, climate-friendly agriculture, methane reduction, carbon offsets and capture. All of those are on the table, and opportunities to build on the infrastructure that's already in place and expertise and experience in Alberta, but to play into the emerging future economy in these areas versus the one that might have been there in the past.
Okay, well, let's switch to another poll question, which asks people to rate what is the cause for the decline in the investment in Canada's oil and gas industry in recent years. And they had to rate the issue by a scale of 1 to 10. And what came back from that is the issues that got the highest rating were the policies of the federal government and criticism of Alberta's oil and gas industry by environmental groups. Further down the list was the oil demand, so the impact of long-term decline or the perception of that on oil demand, as well as the impacts of COVID. This actually kind of surprised me because to me, oil demand is the biggest reason we've lost so much investment in the oil and gas industry here. Janet, how did you take this? Does this polling help maybe explain why the Alberta government has kind of focused more on confrontation with the federal government?
Well, I think one of the important things to keep in mind is, like you said, we ask people to sort of rate each of these things as a contributing factor from a scale from 0 to 10. And what we found was that the six things we tested for, the average ratings ranged from 5.5 out of 10 to 7 out of 10. So the rank order of things is interesting. But keep in mind, everything we mentioned, Albertans saw each of those things as contributing to some degree or not. But true to form with Alberta, our frustration with the federal government comes through strongly on this question. You know, a sense that sometimes the environmental groups gang up on us and hold us back, that came second. And then only did demand really sort of start to kick in third place and fourth place. But it is important to recognize that Albertans do still see that as a factor. It's just those other things maybe rile them up a little bit more.
I mean, if you actually look at the long-term decline in global oil demand, in other words, the phasing out of the industry over the course of the next few decades, it's not that far behind the other two, you know, the policies of the federal government and the policies of the Alberta government. And so, Linda, you know, coming to you, does it surprise you that actually Albertans are fairly attuned to this issue?
No, not really. I mean, our take on that result in terms of that ranking, like Janet said, is it probably reflects more the political rhetoric in Alberta more than the reality of, you know, what's going on in energy markets, right?
Mm-hmm.
The IEA forecast reports the mix is changing, sometimes even faster than the IEA thinks the energy mix will change. And mm-hmm. look at the General Motors announcement yesterday. They're going to move to 100% zero emissions vehicles or get out of the gasoline vehicles altogether in 14 years. You know, fair enough, a lot of these moves are symbolic at this time, but they also are sending strong signals about business and changing market dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And so the parameters of what constitutes competitiveness is changing. And I think Albertans get that. That's reflected in this polling. They want an economy that's more diverse and they support, more importantly, working together in order to figure out how to get there.
Now, the environmental groups rating highly as a cause for some of our problems. The Kenny UCP government did start a public inquiry into how anti-oil groups are funded, with the goal of making recommendations about how to respond to future foreign-funded campaigns and consider the eligibility criteria for charitable tax status. So really going after some of these environmental groups that he felt have helped with the campaign against the Alberta oil sands and the Alberta oil industry. Linda, tell us kind of your position on that. And I think maybe this polling of environmental groups rating high might be related.
Our view, and I'm going to be very diplomatic here, but our view is that there's a real risk this inquiry could end up doing more harm than good to Alberta's long-term economic interests and reputation on some of these issues. Since the outset of the inquiry, we at the Pembina Institute have been concerned that its purpose was predetermined and intended to find all factual and criticism or complaints about oil sands environmental impacts and regulatory gaps and misconducts. We're an Alberta-based organization, 35 years. We stand by our record of constructively contributing to environmental improvement in the oil sands that have helped Alberta's competitiveness and reputation on the global stage. Jackie, 15 years ago, I learned the other day, the Pembina Institute wrote a report that pioneered the idea of net zero oil sands as a way to support market access for Alberta oil. And today, most of those big companies in downtown Calgary have made a commitment to net zero. So I think it demonstrates the importance of criticism, the importance of being open to it, and how that can work with government, industry, and communities, including Indigenous communities and others, for change over time.
We can get into a very long sociological discussion about disenfranchisement. And, you know, over the last 10 years, I don't think it's any secret that the oil and gas industry and the workers, especially in the rural communities, have been beat over the head with a 2x4 with all sorts of negative rhetoric. And so I can kind of see where all this stuff comes from.
So Linda, maybe not everyone that listens to the show recognizes Pembina's long history, how you got started. And I know there's many positive examples of collaboration with Pembina and the province. And I want to share just quickly my examples. You know, when I got into research, it started with the Canadian oil sands when I was still at IHS. And at that time, Pembina was very active bringing awareness to issues that were coming from the rapid expansion at the time of the oil sands. So there were impacts like there's only so much fresh water in the Athabasca River, and we'd approved all these mines that were going to potentially use more water than there really was in the river. There was land issues because of all the cumulative effects of all the in situ development. There was the recognition that the liability from the tailing ponds was growing, and if we were approving all these mines, it would only grow further. And papers that you put out around things like mine reclamation and Albertans being stuck having to pay for that, and there wasn't enough there to protect us. And in every one of these examples over the years I worked in the oil sands, the province did introduce new policy to address some of those concerns. So I think Pembina has done a lot of constructive things in the province with the work that you've done.
Well, thanks, Jackie. I mean, just for the benefit of your listeners that don't know much about Pembina, the organization was founded 35 years ago, really, by a group of local citizens in the Drayton Valley after there'd been a big sour gas explosion there, really one of the worst in Canadian history in Lodgepole, Alberta. It blew out of control, I think, for 68 days and killed three well control specialists. For comparison, the 2010 BP blowout in the Gulf of Mexico killed 11 people and flowed for 87 days. So it was a very, very serious incident. And the local community organized. They were led by local school teachers, Rob McIntosh and Wally Hendricks. And they got together and they made 300 recommendations for reform, environmental and safety reform, to a public inquiry that the government had set up after the accident. And legend has it, all 300 were accepted by government and industry of the day. And thus the Pembina Institute was born. And it was called the, and still is actually, the Pembina Institute for Appropriate Development, in order to recognize its community-based origin in the Pembina oil field and to demonstrate the organization focused on solutions. Mm-hmm. That's a bit of history for those who are interested. And yes, the organization's been very interested in all the issues that Jackie mentioned, as well as orphan wells, and actively supported new technologies and strategies for emissions reduction, including carbon capture. And I've already mentioned methane several times. That's a big issue for us. And last year, we worked with Seven Generations Energy here in Alberta and Energier, which is the largest gas distribution company in Quebec, on the first third-party certification of responsibly produced natural gas in Canada, produced by Seven Gen. And I think you've interviewed the company about that on your podcast. But now we're bigger than Alberta. We run provincial and national programs out of three provinces and five offices. But we still very much define Pembina as an Alberta-based organization when we show up at the national level or the international level. And we have a strong vested interest in a sustainable energy future for Alberta.
You know, you have a very collaborative track record. Hardline environmentalists groups, however, have been quick to villainize the oil industry here in Canada over the past 10 years, the workers in the rural parts of the province. So it's understandable from a sociological, psychological perspective at the individual worker level, why they get worked up about all this and why that has led to things like the public inquiry and so on and so forth. You know, without passing judgment on any of it, you know, you can kind of see why people here are upset when they wake up every morning and see a headline about, you know, oil and gas is evil and we need to shut these people down who are doing this sort of thing. Having said that, I want to get to this question that you answer related to it is, how effective have efforts from the government of Alberta been in enhancing the reputation of Alberta's oil and gas sector? Because it's sort of an effort to try and get out of this negative cycle and rhetoric. And in this case, correct me if I'm wrong, Janet, I think one third thought they had been effective. Why is that?
Yeah, one third said that they thought efforts had been very or somewhat effective, but 63% think the government has been not very or not at all effective. That really sort of goes to the fact that when this government was elected, it talked about having an energy war room, fighting back against criticisms of our oil and gas industry, mm-hmm. telling the story, telling about our success story. And then, of course, we still don't have a report from the Alberta inquiry, so Albertans really can't measure how meaningful that's going to be. And when we've heard from the War Room, which was later named the Canadian Energy Center, when we have heard from them, it hasn't been very positive and it hasn't been very impactful. You know, I think Albertans are frustrated that they didn't think we were telling the story before. They elected a UCP government thinking they would do a better job. And they're frustrated that, you know, we still aren't telling a better story. Another place in the survey, we asked people if they agreed or disagreed that Alberta's oil and gas sector was a world leader when it came to emissions reductions. And Albertans, 65%, you know, agreed that they thought our industry is a world leader. So therein lies the frustration. I think people think there are good news stories coming out of this province, but they're frustrated that those stories aren't being told.
So the government has taken the fight back approach. Only one third, your poll tells us, says that that's been effective. And so can we expect to see some kind of shift going forward? And if so, what sort of collaborative shift would sway public opinion more positively to what needs to be done?
I don't want to second guess what governments can do. I think we have seen a little bit of a shift in tone. I think probably the public would like to see an even bigger shift in tone. But one of the questions we asked was, when it comes to dealing with criticism for Alberta's environmental performance, do you think Alberta should start to work cooperatively with environmental groups or fight back? And in our poll, 61% said work cooperatively with these organizations.
Yeah.
I think when the government was elected, it was elected as a feisty government. It was elected as a government that was going to, you know, take on Ottawa. But April 2019 was a long time ago. And between COVID and the election of Joe Biden in the U.S. and various other things, I think maybe Albertans are backing down from the fight and want to get back to sort of the negotiating table. That's kind of what I'm reading in these results.
From a Pembina perspective, we want to be on that. I mean, we're reading that in the polling results, very encouraged by it. And we do have an idea, besides some of these other tactics, what else Alberta can do in terms of influencing external perspectives. And that idea is not that complicated. I mean, it is in the doing of it, but it's a simple concept. Alberta needs to develop a credible plan that demonstrates how it's going to get to net zero and how it's going to contribute to Canada's goal. That's what needs to be done. And a collaborative approach seems to, there's support for it. Let's get on it.
I think that that sounds great at the Alberta level. But earlier on, Janet, you basically acknowledged that the jelly bean jar is actually three jelly bean jars, Edmonton, Calgary, and rural. So if I had to break this poll down, or why don't you break it down for us in terms of the desire by, say, the rural segment where all the oil and gas workers and livelihoods are, surely one third of them think differently than the people in Edmonton.
Sure. Well, for instance, one of the questions we asked was just whether people supported or opposed the idea of Alberta striving for net zero 2050. And we found out that on a provincial average, 68% of people either strongly or somewhat agreed with the idea of Alberta setting net zero 2050 as a goal. Now, when you look at that at a regional level, 76% of people in Edmonton agree with that. 68% of people in Calgary agree with it. 61% of people outside of the two big cities.
So
there's a big difference in opinion between Edmonton and other Alberta. There's a big difference. But still, I think it's important to remember, even a majority of people outside of Calgary and Edmonton, 61%, think net zero is a goal that we should be supporting.
And I think that was the headline, actually, the Pembina press release was over two-thirds of Albertans support the goal. Maybe not exactly that way, but that was the overall message. And I was actually surprised to see that. I think my feeling was that there was less support for a net zero goal in Alberta. But one question I had about this is these kind of questions, it is very difficult for people to answer this. I think it's quite superficial. Like if I was asked, do you support the environment? Then most people would say yes. They're not going to say that they don't support the environment. But when it gets to the details, are you willing to support a $170 carbon tax? Are you willing for the government to ban the combustion vehicle? Are you willing to pay more for your fuel because of the clean fuel standard? You know, these are not just black and white questions. And I think it's very hard to poll people on such complex questions that actually probably need a full discussion for people to really understand the implications and how they should answer.
Yeah, absolutely. And polling has its limitations. And sometimes we ask people sort of binary questions when we know there's more gray area there, just because we're trying to force sort of some thinking out of people, find out priorities out of people. And so, yeah, I mean, we've got limitations in polling in terms of what we can do. But, you know, there are other research tools at our disposal. For instance, you can do qualitative research. You can do focus groups. So I advise my clients all the time, if you want to know what people are thinking, do a poll. If you want to know why they're thinking what they're thinking, do focus groups. And so I see this poll as sort of
establishing a benchmark of opinion, being a bit of a jumping off point. And Linda can talk more about this. But now it's like, what do you do with this data? How do you turn this data into a bigger conversation with Albertans? How do you get a bigger dialogue going? And polling can only scratch the surface. Now it's time to dig deeper into these issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if I just carry on a bit from there, we're quite pleased with these results because they indicate broadly based agreement on a general direction here towards economic diversification, emissions reduction, and reducing polarization over climate and energy issues. So support for direction, but not on the specifics. But that's okay. Consensus on general direction is a strong starting point, and you got to start even on something mm-hmm. small and build from there. And maybe you don't need another poll here. What you need is, I'm going to go back to it, Peter and Jackie, a plan, a net zero plan. Mm-hmm. That's what Alberta is missing.
And I want to say, you know, I was focused on the costs, but there's also a bunch of benefits. Like these types of goals can result in a whole bunch of new investments, billions of dollars going into carbon capture and hydrogen economy. And it's not all costs, right? There's a lot of benefits, and the plan would help show that too.
Right. And the biofuel economy that the clean fuel standard is going to help establish. So the devil is in the detail, obviously, and some sectors are going to require more heavy lifting than others, and they're going to be tough conversations. But to have the conversations at a table that has some diversity around the table and agreement on a general direction is a pretty good starting place in our perspective.
And what about the achievability of net zero by 2050? Do you have any questions on that one in the polls, and what did it reveal?
No, I mean, we didn't really have questions about the achievability, but we just talked to people about like the extent to which they supported.
Now, you did ask for the people that supported net zero, they were asked a question on how it could be achieved. And there was a binary answer there where 16% thought oil and gas would be phased out for Alberta to achieve this, and 81% thought new technology would help to reduce oil and gas emissions. This is another one where I'm kind of not a huge fan of it, just because I don't know that it's a binary question. I do think realistically we'll produce less oil and gas 20 years from now in a net zero scenario. And at the same time, I think we still will produce some oil and gas, and it will be a lot lower carbon than it is today.
Yeah, and fair enough. I mean, you know, we were forcing people into sort of a binary choice there. But really, what we found was more than two-thirds of Albertans support the idea of going to net zero. And really what we wanted to find out was, what underlies that? Is that a sense that we have to eliminate the industry? Or is that a sense that technology is going to help us get there? So yeah, we were kind of forcing a false choice. But I think what it does demonstrate is the confidence that Albertans have in technology and new solutions. And I think also the enthusiasm that Albertans have for those mm-hmm. new technologies and new developments as being the thing that's going to lead us into Alberta's new economy.
Yeah, there are a lot of young entrepreneurs here that are really excited about those technologies and where they can take them. It's really quite remarkable. Linda, you have sort of the pulse more of the country, certainly you have the pulse of BC. Have you any sense if the rest of Canada would be surprised by this result of two-thirds plus of the people in Alberta support the net zero?
I think so. I'm certainly sending it out by email to everybody I know across Canada. And I think the interesting thing, just on the question of the role of technology and the big faith in that in Alberta, I think that does reveal that Albertans are big kind of techno-optimists at heart, probably more so than many other provinces in Canada. Mm. And you really got to love that about Alberta. You know, whether it's in the oil and gas sector or other sectors, technology and all of its different forms, digitization, AI, machine learning, you know, it's going to clearly play an outside role in Alberta's future. Mm-hmm. And the province's ability to leverage the infrastructure and the talent that's already there, it was established by oil and gas, but can lead to more diversified economic options for the future.
We just have a longstanding culture of adaptation and risk-taking. The oil and gas industry, which is 100 plus years old here, is one of risk-taking, adaptation, a lot of bravado, frankly. And the last 10 years have been really difficult, but I really get the sense that people do see that vision for the future. And certainly the next generations is really taking it to heart.
Yeah. It's a big opportunity there. Canada has many cultures, but mm-hmm. I think that's one of the unique things about Alberta's culture.
So, Janet, if we take a poll 2 years from now, what are we going to hear?
oh, we're going to hear something different. And that's the beauty of polling. You know, we often say that polls are just a snapshot in time, and that's what this one is. And think about how much we've seen change in the last 2 years. Will be changed in the next 2 years. And yeah, I can't wait to get back in the field a year or two from now and see how these numbers change.
Fantastic. Well, thanks to both of you.
Yeah, thank you, Linda. Thank you, Janet.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay,
thank you.
Bye.
And thanks to our listeners. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate us on the app that you listen to and tell someone else about us.
For more ideas and insights, visit arcenergyinstitute.com.